Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12 minutes after 12 o'clock on this Wednesday afternoon, January 18th, time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll talk mortgages a little bit later with a representative from Wintrust in the second half hour, Frank Sennett as well. But let's get things started. Terry Savage is in the studio, and she's ready to go.
We've got some news today. It's not even up in the media that I can see.
I think you've been doing pretty well with breaking news bringing news the past several weeks.
Yeah, because, well, there's always something to do with money and a lot going on now. And I do want to tell you in a minute about the forecast at the economic forecast.
Right, but let's start with our student loans.
This is really hot off the top. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau sued the nation's largest student loan company, Navient, for failing, quote, failing borrowers at every stage of repayment. They are the largest servicer of both federal and private student loans. Now, they don't make the loans. They were formerly part of Sallie Mae, which is formerly a quasi-government agency, right, and is now an independent student loan provider. And Navient is the company that the student loan lenders have service more than $300
billion.
They're the ones that send you a bill and collect. And the list, I could spend our whole 15 minutes of things that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau accuses of them doing are providing bad information, not telling people when they were eligible for programs that could have saved them a lot of money, processing payments incorrectly, even when borrowers said, no, put it on this loan, and continuing to process incorrectly, causing them penalties.
The way I read that
cheating,
is,
quote, illegally cheating many struggling borrowers out of their rights to lower payments.
So the way I read that, like, so you have several loans, you send a check and you say, put some of it here, some of it here, some of it there, and they're kind of, we're just ignoring that.
Consistently ignored it, and even when people, you know, I got a ton of emails and was very frustrated. I usually like to crack through major companies' shells, but this whole student loan servicing business was very, very tough. They took advantage. You know, I get on my soapbox when companies take advantage of people who are the least informed, least able to afford, and the most powerless people. And that's whether it's seniors or student loans or whatever. That gets me boiling.
Last week, Maria LaMagna was on the show from MarketWatch.com, and she was talking about these complaints that these facilitators, and I'm making the assumption it's Navient, but were sort of duping seniors who owed student loans, that they weren't informing them of programs available to them. And that sounds like part of the complaint here.
It is astounding that I think that most seniors who are applying for regular old age Social Security, not the disability program, have outstanding student loans primarily because they co-signed for their kids. I mean, they were in college presumably 40 years ago. Now, we will maybe have a generation coming up that took out student loans and never paid them off and get their Social Security doc. But there are provisions to get a co-signer off the loan if you make certain consecutive payments. And one of the charges against Navient here by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is that they did not inform them or miscalculated if people paid ahead and paid down, got some money, paid down their loans for 4 or 5 months, then they said, oh, well, now you've broken your consecutive payment string, you know, so you can't get your co-signer off. Student loans now top $1.3 trillion. There's more student loan debt than credit card debt. At yesterday's luncheon, I do a preview of some economic sectors before the forecast. Student loan debts are like a line on a chart, like your old-fashioned line from the bottom left to the top right, soaring as the private lenders got out of the business pretty much and the federal government took it over. And maybe that's what's to be expected.
So you could say that Navient is just being lazy and not doing their job,
no,
or that they're ripping people off?
Well, you know what? Let's see how they respond, because the cases I've seen personally of people writing me and the cases alleged in this complaint are so outrageous that they will probably require them to pay borrowers billions of dollars in interest that were paid because that when they wouldn't have had to. I think it's going to be a huge financial deal here.
Right.
Unless, by the way, the new administration looks at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, as many have, because they're really accountable to none, which is maybe what makes them so aggressive, and says, I think we'll do away with that. it's not a federal, it's sort of a quasi-independent agency, so we'll see.
Let's move from that then to the Executive Club forecast. Okay. While we have a couple of minutes. Okay. What did you see there?
So here's a question. How do you forecast, and these are the things I ask them to forecast, GDP, like how fast is our economy growing? How do you forecast interest rates, the 10-year Treasury currently around 2.4%, the stock market, the Dow, a year ahead, and the U.S. dollar? Those were among the things we asked them to forecast. Now, look, every single part of our economy is in play. The biggest parts, healthcare. I mean, not just only the insurance part of it, but the hospitals and the doctors and the and drug companies and so forth. That's all in play. Financial part of our economy, the banks, will there be regulations? You name it. Immigration is going to impact all kinds of companies. So how could you ask three great economists, and they are great economists, Diane Swonk, who was with Mesereau for many years, I'm sure you've had her on, and now has her own economic consulting firm, and Dr. Bob Frelick, who's retired as a director. He's written six books, and he's hysterical. And Michael Gregory, we had someone in from Canada to take a look at how the other NAFTA partners are thinking about Washington. How do they forecast? Now, I want to tell you, there was a lot of bullishness. In fact, Dr. Bob, who a year ago, when the Dow was under 16,000, and I keep track, had forecast that this, by year end, the Dow would be 19,019.
Wow, not too bad.
I remember when he said that. It's up 4,000 points from its lows, by the way, of last year. And when I heard him say that, the whole audience gasped last year. So what I really wanted to know what his forecast was for this year.
And it was?
It was, for the Dow, end of the year, 22,222.
Nice.
He said he made it memorable so I wouldn't forget. So there's still, this. Leave politics aside, there is, the markets have come a long way. It's possible that they could go a lot further if nobody does anything too crazy in Washington. A trade war could despoil all of this. A lot could spoil it. But business is chugging along, so is the economy, and the Fed seems to have things well under control. So.
That's Terry Savage. We'll talk more about that and also about your 401k or your will and all of the beneficiary information. Right? Time to update that?
Absolutely.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:23 on a Wednesday afternoon. Terry Savage is in the studio. Okay, so your column at terrysavage.com.
Let me follow up first.
You
we're just
follow
quickly
up. You
on
do
the
whatever
stock
you
market.
Want.
Well, the Dow, I'm looking at it down for about 46 points, so okay. We're around 19,780. And what popped up on my screen is Jamie Dimon, who is in Davos, you know, right. The chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase, who said just now the economy could grow at 3 to 4% this year. That is, by the way, in comparison with overall growth under 2% this year. We had a good third quarter. Fourth quarter, as you've seen from Target and the retailers, was not so strong, maybe about 2.8%. He's saying maybe 3 to 4% growth. And the important point, because he's not an economic forecaster, is what he said afterwards. That could boost the stock market even further.
There you go,
but
Dr.
It'll
Bob.
It'll take a while to see what happens with taxes. That's basically, I think I'm paraphrasing Jamie Dimon's point, okay. Which is why don't get scared out in your retirement accounts.
So all of this is happening because of the Republicans coming in and this idea that all sort of...
On the one hand...
They're going to be, every business is going to be unleashed?
Thank you. That's a very short term. It will be unleashed to make profits, grow the economy, and hire people. On the other hand, there's all this uncertainty about what crazy thing they might do. I don't want to talk about that. Let's talk about beneficiaries.
Okay, yeah. So I was reading TerrySavage.com and this idea that... And I get the notices in the mail, I think, or emails, where it's time to update your beneficiary.
Do you really? Who do you get that from?
I think for for the 401k.
From your 401k. That's really great.
Right.
Think about all the people that are, you know, getting close to retirement, not retired yet, haven't looked at their 401ks, worked for a small time at some other company. They know they've got a 401k trailing them there, but they're just not going to look at it because, good, that's extra money.
Well, I have a SEP IRA from the 80s, you know, and I'm not getting notices there.
So that was probably before you were married.
Right.
Or for some people, it was when you were married to your last spouse. Right. So what happens if you get hit by the truck tomorrow? That 401k, because you had named your ex-spouse as a beneficiary, goes directly to that person. That doesn't go through court. Beneficiaries of both retirement accounts and life insurance policies collect the money directly. And so you need right now to look at all retirement accounts, all life insurance policies, and make sure you update. You don't need a lawyer to update the beneficiary. Call the custodian, the mutual fund company, the company that sponsored your 401k, your IRA, the mutual fund company, the life insurance, and make sure you have an updated beneficiary.
So if my will says,
and a secondary too.
If my will says everything goes to Terry Savage, but my 401k designated Ben Awake Knight for it,
that's
it would
our new
go
producer,
to him.
Yes. Yeah. That he's going to get that money.
Even though my will says to go to you.
Exactly. Now, that's really important.
Well, that's
it doesn't
good news
go
for
through
Bennett.
Probate. It's good news for the ex-spouse who collects. Or somebody, but you know, it could be somebody who's deceased, predeceased you. Maybe you had your mother as a beneficiary years ago when you first started work and you had that old 401k plan. And I'm sorry,
sure.
But now, okay.
Mom's gone.
So you need to take a look. January is the perfect time.
Tell me about why you shouldn't name your two-year-old son.
Oh, no, you don't want to name a minor child, even though the money is designated for his or her college education, because minors cannot legally hold that money. So the court typically appoints a trustee.
Who would that be?
And the trustee is someone that the court trusts. Okay, now it may not be your spouse or anything else if there's some concerns. And that trustee makes decisions like that you might not have made if you were alive. You're 16, you can get a car, you need it for college. Or you can't go to that expensive college because I don't think you should. So what you need, if you want to make a minor child the beneficiary, you need to have your estate plan. You need an attorney. Create a trust that springs into life to receive the proceeds of that life insurance policy. And you put the things in there. The trustee is going to be my lawyer, my brother. And when my child turns 16, if necessary, and any medical expenses like orthodontia, if necessary, you like to be around to pay for that yourself. But you just want to make sure. And also in it, you'll put, and at age 18, the kid gets 10% or no.
Right,
maybe
right.
21 gets 25% and 25 gets the rest.
Okay, so and then why is it that you should also put a little codicil in there or a warning to the person who's going to be the beneficiary not to take the cash right away?
Okay, so this applies to IRAs and retirement plans. The temptation is, oh my gosh, Dad left me $50,000 in an IRA. How sweet, I'm the beneficiary. That was so sweet. I'll take it right now and go buy a car. But the fact is, beneficiaries of retirement plans have certain options. If they're a spouse, they get great options, but even children can roll over the account into their own IRA, an inherited IRA, and depending on their relationship to the decedent, they might be forced to take a little bit out each year. But the big key is you've got money that can grow tax deferred until your retirement. So please advise your family members, don't just take that money out, the IRA beneficiary. Go to the mutual fund company, the custodian, and take a look at those options.
Terry Savage, nice to see you again.
Glad to be with you. I'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you in a week. We're going to take a break, check the headlines. Frank Senna will be along a little bit later then, and we'll talk about Amazon. They're hiring, and not just drones either. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1237 on this Wednesday afternoon. Frank Senate is on the phone line. Frank from Crane Chicago Business joins us from time to time to talk about what's in that newspaper, magazine, and online. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good.
What's the favorite vehicle you see in your street? Is it the police car, the Schwann's delivery man, or the Amazon truck? It's the Amazon truck.
It seems like more and more that's the case, doesn't it?
And Amazon is fast becoming it's got to be one of Illinois' biggest employers. Is that possible?
Yeah, it has gone from 7 employees. I'm sorry. I was reading the wrong line. It has gone to an explosive growth spurt with all the new warehouses and everything that it's opening up, both in the city and the suburbs. So, yeah, they are covering the waterfront in this town to try to do more just-in-time delivery as people, you know, rely on it more and more for same-day service.
Right, I know
it seems like no end in sight.
They've got, what, 5 distribution centers now? They've got 4 or 5 more that they're planning on building within the next year or two?
Yeah, and overall, this is a national growth plan of more than 150,000 U.S. jobs in the last 5 years, and it'll be adding another 100,000 full-time jobs with benefits over the next 18 months. So they're going to open more urban warehouses for the Prime Now deliveries, and Cook County is going to be a beneficiary of that.
What kind of jobs are these, Frank? Because it seems to me, I remember stories about how brutal it was to work in an Amazon warehouse. But I don't remember if it was Amazon or a subcontractor, exactly how that all worked. But what kinds of jobs? Are these pretty good jobs?
Well, they are saying that they're going to be full-time jobs with benefits. So in terms of pay and health coverage and that kind of thing, probably fairly competitive. They're going to pay between $11 and $13 an hour at their local fulfillment centers. And I have seen some exposés about some of the warehouse operations over the last several years. And they have, I think, done a lot more automation in terms of the picking. And the delivery jobs are kind of similar, I think, to UPS and FedEx and all of that stuff. So hopefully it's a decent condition for a decent wage.
One of the things that interests me is that, you know, Amazon would not build here for so many years because Illinois correctly taxes, charges tax for things that people buy on Amazon, right? And I know there are a number of states that don't assess their sales tax, but if you buy something here in Illinois, I don't remember the particulars of it, but you have to have a, there's a brick and mortar involved. Anyway, Amazon.
If there's a brick and mortar location and you order online, you do have to pay sales tax. And so Amazon was trying to get around that. You're correct.
Right. So I started talking and talked myself into an alley. Right. So they wouldn't build in the state because then they would have to charge taxes. So they stayed
That's
out
right.
for many years. But now here they are. Illinois held out on that. Right. And so that seems to, Illinois does so many things so badly. That seems to be a case where they showed a little backbone and ended up winning out.
It did pay off in the sense that Amazon now has that, you know, prime delivery service. They need to be closer to all their customers now. So there became a business need that superseded the sales tax question. But the other thing is that the state has committed to a total of $112 million in tax breaks over the next decade in exchange for the 9 centers and 7,000 jobs in Illinois. So there's a carrot as well as a stick. But yeah, for a long time, states were capitulating on the sales tax front, and if they weren't, Amazon wouldn't play ball. And here we are. We get the sales tax revenue, and Amazon is adding jobs.
Well, Amazon needs that tax break, Frank. We all know that they're not doing very well.
That's right. It's tough all over for Amazon.
Their revenue averages $464,000 per employee, which is a pretty good return.
It's very nice. But it is less than Apple, Facebook, Google, or Netflix. All of those generate more than $1 million per employee.
That's pretty amazing.
But it's a lot more, yeah, but it's a lot more than regular mainstream retailers with a lot of brick and mortar. So what you're really looking at is kind of the amount of physical labor it takes to sustain these businesses, more in terms of a Nordstrom and a Walmart, less in terms of an Apple and a Facebook. Amazon's kind of in the middle.
So are these jobs then, in a sense, temporary jobs? Is this the, I mean, everyone's talking about drones and automation. I would imagine that warehouse jobs are the sort of thing that could be pretty easily, completely automated pretty closely down the road.
Well, I would say any job that can be replaced by a robot or a drone is probably a temporary job in these high-tech times. But it sounds like WGN AM employees will be fine because you're all on the Amazon Echo now, right?
Yeah, I'm doing news on the Amazon Echo. Have you heard me yet?
I have not, but I read the story and I thought that's really amazing. What a cool thing.
It's kind of fun. Every hour or so, someone in the newsroom is recording a newscast for Amazon for the Echo. And so when someone says, "Hey, Alexa, what's going on?" or something like that, it's one of us giving you the headlines. So that's pretty cool. I thought you were going to
say, do you deliver pizza?
I don't deliver pizza, and I'm sure one day Alexa will be interviewing you on this show. So speaking of temporary jobs, here's another temporary job, the job of president. And Barack Obama is going to move out in a couple of days, and he's going to move out too quickly to secure this funding for the Union Station rehab, or where exactly are we there?
Yeah, so Rahm Emanuel has been really trying to get some transit money in. He got a big CTA grant in right before the transition, but he still needs $1 billion, a federal loan, to modernize and expand Union Station, and that's going to have to go through President-elect Donald Trump. It'll be interesting. There's a kind of a public-private deal. He's met with Senator Dick Durbin and former Senator Mark Kirk. He wants financing under the Railroad Rehabilitation and Improvement Financing Loan. Now, as you know, Donald Trump is sparred a little bit with the city of Chicago, but he also has a big tower here. And as you and I talked about right after the election, infrastructure is one of his big priorities.
Right.
So it could be interesting. This could be something that, you know, of all the things that the mayor might ask for, it might be the kind of thing that could get the green light.
Now, you look at the fact that 120,000 people go in and out of Union Station every day. It's busier than a lot of airports in this country, and certainly in need of work, in need of a lot of work. So I hope they can work that out.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, they were hoping to get it in under the wire, but now they've got to work with the new administration. And, you know, hopefully that was the talk translates into action on infrastructure. That seems like the biggest bipartisan issue probably in Washington moving forward in the next few years.
We'll see, won't we? I mean, I really am not putting stock in anything yet until something happens, because I just think there's a lot of talking right now, and we don't know really in what direction anyone's going to go.
That's true. That's true.
Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business, thanks for coming by today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. At Wintrust, here's a Wintrust mortgage expert, George Kaiser, in the studio with us. George, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
This is the first time of many. I don't know if you realize that. We're going to have you in once a week, twice a week.
Okay. Oh, I can't wait.
Mortgage expert, so you're watching, right? And the mortgage rates, I thought they were headed pretty much steadily up since the election, but there was a little blip, right, with a little pause there.
Right, yeah. I believe the... It seems like it's a little overcooked. A lot of times markets lead on expectations. So, again, when the election did take place, you've seen rates probably, they were up about 5/8 of a point.
Mm-hmm.
But they've kind of come back a little bit. So call it about a half a point since the election.
They've been up about a half of a point.
Right.
And
right.
So people read that and they hear that and they're like, oh, my God, you know, the rate's going up. They're still, I mean, historically, we're at a very low rate.
We're historically low rates, depending on who you're talking to. You can remember when interest rates were at 13, 15. Some people,
I think my first 18%. Condo was 11%.
Yeah, I was at 13.
Yeah, so, is that right?
So, yeah. So it's a great time still. Affordability is fantastic. And, you know, where are rates going? I mean, there's, you know, as I said, it's unknown where all the policies that are going to be put in place.
Right.
I don't want to talk politics, but.
Okay, and so that's kind of what I'm getting to. Even if they continue to go up, at what point do the rates start to inhibit people from buying? Because it would seem to me like they've got quite a distance to go before that happens.
Yeah, I would guess at 5%. I mean, people start really,
right?
It might take some people out of the market. I mean, 39% of the houses purchase were first time home buyers, and that's what we need. We need affordable housing. So we need more
of that on the market.
Yeah. So what happens is, I believe if the rate would hit over 5%, it's going to take some of that affordability out of the equation.
Okay.
So,
how are we doing in this region? It seems like every time I see a Case-Shiller study or anything, like, Chicago's not doing so well.
Yeah. Well, the city's doing well. I mean, the condo market down here is fantastic.
Okay.
West Loop, all those areas. Lincoln Park they really weren't as hurt as much when there was a blip in the housing market back in 07, 08. They have come back. They're up in some areas. I mean, they're up 3-5%.
Uh-huh.
If you look at somewhere like Logan Square, I mean, that appreciation's at 30-40%. That's a hot market out there. And really, it's kind of, everyone's trying to find that next affordable market.
How about in the suburbs? How are they doing?
And that's what's happening in the suburbs. I mean, you'll see, you know, let's say along the North Shore, you'll see it's lagging behind, I would say, by about 8-10%.
Is that because it started so high in the first place?
Yeah.
Or started higher in the
yes.
first place?
Okay. Started high in the first place. People aren't leaving the city. I mean, if you go down to Lincoln Square, I mean, you'll see, you know, people, they're pushing the children in their carriages,
right.
Still, they're young people.
So those are the people who used to go to the suburbs,
right.
Drive the price up there. Now they're coming,
they're just
staying.
They're staying in the city. They're staying,
and
the
mayor's doing really well at raiding the suburbs and bringing business back downtown.
That's the other thing that's happened. A lot of businesses are coming back downtown. And, you know, the millennials, they don't drive. They like their Uber and they like public transportation.
Yeah.
So that's where you see where there's the hot spots in the city are where you see public transportation.
I think it was some people in from LaGrange last year. They're planners and how they're building now high-rise communities right around train stations strictly because of millennials, because that's the way they commute.
Right. And you'll see that Lake Forest is doing a big project right near the downtown Lake Forest with condominiums.
And it's all about getting – it's pretty remarkable, isn't it? I mean, tell me, but it seems like millennials more than any of these other sort of named groups are really having an impact on us.
They really are, and I have three of them, so I see their behaviors.
So they're having a real impact on you.
No cars and public transportation.
Tell me then, in the minute we've got left – we talk a lot about property values and all that, but if someone's looking or they're in the market for a house, mm-hmm. and they're going to come to you for a mortgage, what is the thing that you think that they maybe overlook that they don't think of before it's time to, or something they should think of earlier?
I think there's a perception it's hard to get a mortgage out there. I mean, you've heard that. It's not. I mean, consultation, if you're going to go out getting ready to buy or need to refinance, sit down and talk to someone and really find out what it's about. Because you can get a mortgage. Yes, there's a few more, a little more effort,
right.
I would say, in doing it. But it's not impossible.
They're out there.
And things are getting easier.
George Kaiser, the mortgage specialist for Wintrust Bank. Thanks very much for coming by.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
I hope we can do it again. I was kidding earlier, but I hope you'll come back sometime.
Let me know. It's right. Great coming downtown.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.